Hello and welcome to Truth News Radio Australia. Tonight we have a number of interesting things to discuss. We're going to be looking at health issues in the Sydney area, and we've got some very interesting points to raise in regard to treatment of mental health patients in Sydney and the closure of Rozelle Hospital. We're also going to be looking at the international food crisis. We're going to be looking at changes to our legislation that we find repugnant, such as draconian laws prohibiting the use of laser pointers. And we're going to have a roundtable discussion on many things. So sit back and relax, and please enjoy, and feel free to contribute at the end of the show.
I'm Joshua Jackson.
I'm Herewood Fenton.
And you're listening to Truth News Australia.
Well, tonight we have an interesting subject, and this is the imminent closure of Rozelle Psychiatric Hospital and the current protests which are taking place, and the next one is scheduled for this coming Sunday, by the Friends of Callan Park, which is a group which is dedicated to keeping the Rozelle Psychiatric Hospital open. Now, the reason why this broadcast is focused on this subject this week is actually a little bit accidental, and it's because I was there on the weekend walking through the Callan Park with a friend of mine, and we were looking, just wandering through, and we saw the signs, and we noticed that there was an incredible state of dilapidation in the hospital, and we actually had a wander through and we had a look into some of the windows, and we saw the what appears to be an operating hospital, but at the same time what appears to be an incredibly neglected facility.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, I've been through there and I've seen weeds overgrowing everywhere. I've seen deserted buildings. But like you said as well, you go past some buildings and there's washing on the line. And it looks like a horror show. It looks like some sort of freaked out horror show, like that, you know, because it's so overrun.
Indeed, and you know, as you wander through the vast, you know, grounds, you find that there are many buildings which have been abandoned, and this is not something I was really aware of before, that there are so many abandoned buildings there, and it seems a disgrace that such solid, you know, well constructed heritage buildings should be in such a state,
especially with the rate of homelessness.
Indeed. I mean, these buildings could be used productively in many, many different ways. And what we subsequently discovered was that there has been a plan in place, and the pressure has been on for a few years now to completely change Callan Park, to privatise it essentially. And one of the points to make here, which I think is really important, is that the Callan Park grounds is one of the most beautiful parks in Australia. It is extremely beautiful. There are old, beautiful, giant gum trees. There's a beautiful bamboo garden.
Oh yeah,
and it's really a precious part of our Sydney heritage.
Maybe so. And today we've got a guest in Maxim Haim. He's been a Buddhist monk for 5 or 6 years. He's been in mental health for more than 6 years, and welcome, Max.
Yeah, thanks. It's good to be here.
So you've worked in Rozelle. What's your connection to Rozelle?
Well, I don't work in Rozelle. I work in a NGO that has clients that go to Rozelle Hospital, and we pick them up or go and visit them there.
And so you keep them company. I think the company, the NGO you work for is called Aftercare.
Yeah, that's correct, yes.
And they look after patients once they're ready to try and be rehabilitated.
Yeah, Aftercare. Aftercare is a big organisation, but the section or the area that I'm in is in mental health or psych, and we help to integrate patients back into the community at large after they come out of Rozelle Hospital. So I have a little bit of insight in the hospital, but don't actually work there.
So, Max, are you familiar with the plans to basically privatise the Callan Park grounds?
Oh, I became, to my surprise, about a couple of months ago, I became aware that Roselle Hospital was being shut down. I was told while I was at one of the wards that they were going to be moving. I was quite surprised because I guessed that this would have been going on for quite some time.
Yeah, and like from what we've found, that there is a big group who's been working to basically protect the park, and they're known as Friends of Callan Park. And they've been running protests, rallies. There have been politicians coming to these rallies. And there is a big movement towards protecting the park. But what it appears is that the authorities are just shutting it down regardless. And there seems to be no due process. This is what we found, is that rather than a decision having been made followed by, you know, shutting the hospital down, the decision hasn't been made, yet the hospital is being shut down. It seems that that actions are being taken in the absence of a clear legislative mandate.
Well, that's right. It doesn't seem to have been sort of publicly posted, so to speak, that, you know, normally it would be sort of some consultation with a local area, local community, about saying, what would you like to happen to this area? So certainly seems to have just come right out of the blue, and particularly when you're working closely in the field to find out that was happening, it was a very big surprise.
And so what is the actual plan for Roselle?
The plan that is in the process of being approved, and it hasn't been approved yet, but the plan that Frank Sartor is trying to push through is to have Sydney University turn the entire Roselle grounds into a private, well, into a, not private, but it's a campus, it's a university campus, which will be largely private because it's running on commercialized university system. So most of the actual stuff that goes on there will be fee-paying students. This is the trend that we've seen over and over again in educational institutions. This is where they make most of their money, and this is what they will inevitably do. So it is going in under the guise of being something for the good of the general public. But in my experience, what that really means is that you're going to have commercialized, privatized education, which brings nothing back to the community. It's also going to involve, you know, the destruction of a lot of the grounds. It's going to involve a lot of things which are going to destroy the beauty of the current environment. And, of course, the other side of it is the eviction of the people who have been housed there, many of whom, as I was told at the rally that I went to last week, many of whom are war veterans, many of whom are people who've suffered severe trauma in public service, and they are going to be essentially given no options other than the lockdown facility at Concord, as it was described.
Yeah, so these old diggers who've served our country come back, and after years of mental torture and all sorts that they go through, now are being kicked out to go to a lockdown facility, what, in Concord?
And this facility has very poor public transport. It's a long way from the metropolitan area. It's definitely not going to have the grounds or the healing.
The nature, the nature around the beautiful parklands.
Yeah, I mean, there was a philosophy behind the grounds of Roselle Psychiatric Hospital, and despite many things that occurred, which we probably wouldn't agree with, the idea of giving people with mental problems a natural environment in which to recover, I think, is one thing that we need to hang on to. You know, that's one thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, the pharmaceuticals would say something else.
Yeah. And you know, there's another consequence of moving the hospital to Concord, which Max brought up earlier in our discussion before we came online, which is that the police will not take psych patients to Concord because it's too far. Max, would you like to speak to that at all?
Oh yeah, just on regards when some of the patients or people are out on the street. You can edit a bit, can't you?
Yeah.
When they're the police have sort of quietly said that it's a long way for them to drive. It's not something that they particularly like to do. It's going to Roselle was a bit of a courtesy for helping out, and that they're not prepared to really drive all the way out to Concord to drop patients off. So from now on, they'll drop them at Camperdown or the RPA, which has no facilities for looking after patients that are in deep distress or psychologically unwell. So certainly changed the feeling around Camperdown as well.
And Max, when we were chatting earlier, you mentioned some changes to the way in which the prescriptions are being authorised now. And this seems to somehow fit in with this plan, and I'm not quite sure why, but the current system has changed. Can you fill us in on that?
Well, it's just something that I was recently told. So, it's unconfirmed really, but it's that the Commonwealth is withdrawn the prescription pads that the clients go to. Normally have a case manager, and often that will be a doctor or psychiatrist, and the prescription pads are to be withdrawn from those case managers, and that the client is to go to a general practitioner to get his medication or her medication, which is sort of double or triple handling, which something that when someone's in deep distress is about the last thing that they feel like doing. It also takes away the ability to monitor or watch the patient from the case management point of view.
This seems like a system to me designed to cause chaos, designed to fail. And one has to wonder why such a plan would be put in place. It literally boggles my mind. I can't quite grasp it.
Well, just going back to the police not picking up some of these patients, where are they going to drop them if they find someone going mad in the streets? And some of these severe schizophrenic patients.
Well, as I said, they'd be dropped at Camperdown at the emergency
at the RPA there.
At the RPA,
right? Yeah.
Which is a very small facility.
Yeah, very small.
I mean, I went down there a few weeks back because my girlfriend got a stomach bug, and it was really strong. So we thought, well, we better get you down to the hospital. We were waiting there for 6 hours.
Yeah,
I mean, 6 hours.
4 hours is an average in emergency now.
So. I mean, that is absurd. And now think of these poor people getting picked up and being brought there. Where there's no rooms or facilities because the police refused to bring them all the way up to Concord.
That's right. There's definitely a lot of problems, sort of unforeseeable problems that are coming our way, including, I think, in the general sort of environment and community around us as well. Not to say that the patients, they deserve a lot more dignity and help than this is giving them.
I mean, I just like to say that the prevailing view of what mental illness is not something I agree with, and this is based on a lot of research and study of my own, and I don't think it can even be said that the prevailing view has strong scientific grounding behind
it. That's right, yeah.
But that the prevailing view, which is a popular view, is that most forms of mental illness are merely biochemical imbalances, and that this is a genetic in origin, and that this is best treated with drugs. And so with that philosophy in mind, that the approach is to basically not provide care so much as medication, and it seems that there's a whole program of withdrawing care. Just gradually.
Well, it's all based on Big Pharma wanting to push pharmaceuticals and push serotonin reuptake inhibiting drugs on patients to basically dumb them down. I mean, we're feeding these sort of drugs to all sorts of people, not just extreme schizophrenics, but young school children that are slightly depressed. You know, as a society, we're popping these things like there's no tomorrow. And every school shooting in the States and around the world, every one of them, has been someone on a legal drug, on some sort of serotonin reuptake inhibitor.
There are many, many cases of violence associated with SSRI drugs. And this has been the case right from the beginning.
Well, it's when they actually come off the drugs, when they stop taking it. So they're on these things, they're happy as Larry, all of a sudden they've stopped. They have some sort of fit and get rid of them, or they just forget. And instantly they become absolutely way worse than they ever would have been. And decide that they're going to go and, beat the hell out of someone or go and shoot someone if they got access to guns, or stab someone if they got access to knives. But saying this, so this is just, saying this, this is why we need good systems in place with caring people like Max.
especially in the light of recent studies. There was a recent study which was conducted, a prestigious university, a prestigious study, which showed that antidepressants have no benefit over a placebo. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're familiar with this, Max. Yeah, it was in the news a bit recently. I mean, it was quite a bombshell. It was a bombshell story. And I really think that a few more of those, and really the cat's out of the bag. I mean, the scam that has been pulled with pharmaceutical medication for mental illness is something that is being exposed. And I think we need more discussion of it, and we need radio shows like this, and we need people to be able to stand up and talk about it.
Well,
to have a voice.
The fact of the matter is, as well, the mass medication through fluoridation of our water, which has been proven since the studies in the 1940s that attacks a certain part of the brain that produces serotonin, gets attracted to that, and then subsequently attracts heavy metals and poisons to that part of the stopping serotonin from getting out. There's so many studies, basically. A lot fluoride in our water has got a lot to do with mass depression.
Well, it's a tricky subject, but studies have shown that fluoridation does decrease IQ. There have been studies that have shown.
Absolutely, China's just released theirs.
Yeah. There's definitely clear evidence for that. The problem there is, I mean, fluoridation is certainly an issue.
Sorry, I'm digressing. So back to the Roselle issue. I think if people want to find out more about this issue, what do you think they should do?
Well, I think they should go to www.callanpark.com, because that is a site dedicated to the Friends of Callan Park, who are trying to stop this atrocious, you know, degradation of our public lands and our health-caring facilities.
We'd at least like to see some sort of public forum.
Indeed.
You know, indeed. I mean, this is an old place.
It sounds like it hasn't been properly tended and given community consultation.
No. And there is a demonstration next Sunday, did you say, or this
there
Sunday?
This Sunday, Anzac Sunday, and it'll probably be a big one. The last one was moderate in size, but a lot of people are coming out for this. And this is the people against big business and government together. And this is a union of the worst kind. When business and government join together against the people,
well, you get fascism.
Yeah, well, that was what was called corporatism by Mussolini, and he actually said that. Corporatism was actually fascism.
Well, it was the mother of all fascism, really. Mm. All right. Well, it's time for a musical interlude. And
righto.
Here we go.
I met a woman long ago, her hair the black that black can go. Are you a teacher of the heart? Soft, she answered no. I met a girl across the sea, her hair the gold that gold can be. Are you a teacher of the heart? Yes, but not for thee. I met a man who lost his mind in some lost place I had to find. Follow me, the wise man said, but he walked behind. I walked into a hospital where none was sick and none was well. When at night the nurses left, I could not walk at all. Morning came and then came noon. Dinner time, a scalpel blade lay beside my silver spoon. Some girls wander by mistake into the mess that scalpels make. Are you the teachers of my heart? We teach old hearts to break. One morning I woke up alone, the hospital and the nurse is gone. Have I carved enough, my lord? Child, you are a bone. I ate and ate and ate. plate. No, I did not miss a plate. Well, how much do these suppers cost? We'll take it out in hate. I spent my hatred every place, on every work, on every face. Someone gave me wishes and I wished for an embrace. Several girls embraced me then. I was embraced by men. Is my passion perfect? No, I'll do it once again. I was handsome, I was strong. I knew the words of every song. Did my singing please you? No, the words you sang were wrong. Whom I address, who takes down what I confess? Are you the teachers of my heart? We teach old hearts to rest. Oh, teachers, are my lessons done? I cannot do another one. They laughed and laughed and said, well, child, are your lessons done? Are your lessons done? Are your lessons done?
Well, welcome back to the show, and big thanks there to Leonard Cohen for that deep odyssey into the labyrinth.
What a beautiful track.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah, yeah.
And, Leonard Cohen. Teachers.
A deep interest there in mental states that are certainly abnormal. But the question is, and I think I'd like to just raise this for a brief discussion, is the question is, is there such a thing as mental illness? Now, there's a famous book which was authored in the 60s called The Myth of Mental Illness, which was written by Thomas Zatz, I believe is the name. And he's been one of the big advocates of really re-examining what we call mental illness and changing the language that we use to describe it. And at that time, there was a large movement. R.D. Lang was another such person, a psychiatrist as well. And quite a few people since have opposed the notion that we should treat mental illness as a biological, purely biochemical imbalance. And they've been opposed by the movement in medicine known as biopsychiatry, which wishes to treat all mental illness as merely a malfunction of chemicals and molecules
in your
brain. Some
sort of chemical imbalance, yes.
Yeah, but basically they want to get down to a purely biochemical model of human behavior, and then underlying.
Well, it's absolutely absurd. How can you say that every part of our body and human constitution is purely biochemical, and that there's no spiritual or anything involved? I mean, we honestly don't know.
And underlying that, what they want to propose is that it's actually controlled by your genes. So this ends up actually being eugenic. It ends up being a form of treating a human being basically as defective because they may have certain genes which you believe to be associated with an illness, which you believe is a biochemical illness. And yet the proof that schizophrenia or depression are actually purely biochemical has never been shown.
Oh, well, it's another form of eugenics, absolutely, that can be categorized and destroyed or manipulated into such a way that you're just a dumb mess, is left to rot, you know, in a place like Roselle.
And there's another point here which, you know, I'd like to just bring Max in on, but which is that the history of the use of psychiatric interventions and you know, going back through the history of psychiatry prior to the current age of medicines, there were forms of intervention such as the coma, the insulin coma that used to be used. Patients were put into an insulin coma to basically make them more docile and manageable.
Lobotomies.
The lobotomy was widely practiced, and then electroshock therapy, which is actually still practiced.
Still practiced. Yep.
And these are incredibly invasive things that by any definition of the term, you must say do damage. Well,
not only invasive, but absolutely crude.
Well, they are damaging your brain. I mean, there's no other way of putting it. And but in contrast to that, we have the generation of biochemical drugs, which began in the 1950s with the invention of the antipsychotic medications. Now, my own research here has shown me that the antipsychotic medications, what they really do is they interfere with the dopamine process of the brain, And they appear to basically just induce a form of paralysis. And I know that these same medications were used as animal tranquilizers, and that was how they were originally brought into use. In Africa, they were being used to tranquilize large game animals, and it was thought that, yes, we could use this on people too.
That's right, yeah. And it's something interesting that I was sort of talking with you before is that we're coming in a sort of a full circle again with looking at the idea that you can actually recover from the term mental illness. And it's quite important that our language changes in how we're defining mental illness and not calling someone a schizophrenic or and defining that as a whole person rather than something that they have. And even at this point, we could debate, you know, what that was.
Yeah.
So you're saying instead of calling somebody a schizophrenic, you say that person has schizophrenia.
That person has schizophrenia.
So they are a person. They are a person with a lot of different
things about them. They're not identified by their illness or disease, whatever term is used. And that is also something that is recoverable, which is pretty, I should say, within psych, that's something that's not accepted. But Wollongong University has been working on the idea that it is possible, called the collaborative recovery model, and it's something that I've been working with them for the last 5 years, off and on, in research, and something that we at Aftercare are now using on every area of our work daily.
What does that entail?
It just entails looking at them as a whole person, and really setting tasks and goals. And measuring those as they go along so that they actually see outcomes, they actually see results from something that they decided to do. And slowly it builds their confidence. It helps them realize that, as again, that they're not defined by this and that they can set goals and achieve goals. And treating them like anyone else, giving them a graduation ceremony when they achieve you know, a good outcome for their goals and what they've set, so that they actually feel that they're a part of something and that they're striving towards something like anyone else.
And using your Buddhist meditation techniques or meditation techniques in general, do you find any success, or do you even try to teach forms of meditation? Because a lot of mental illness is, you know, associated with the brain and inside thought.
That's right,
and
yeah.
Internal speech. Being able to calm the internal voice and the monkey mind, as you would put it, how do you find that integrates into the well-being of somebody that's suffering from schizophrenia?
It integrates really well. It's something that takes a little bit of time to do. And however, when you're subject to sort of rules under the Mental Health Act, there's sort of things that you can and can't do. I definitely quietly help them with breathing exercises and other things like that, which sort of reduce their anxiety, because a lot of schizophrenia is anxiety is mixed up.
Sorry, what are you saying, that there's government outlined specifications not to willy-nilly teach people how to meditate?
Well, no, it's more that you don't make any suggestion that they may come off their medication. So
right.
You're not responsible for them coming off medication. You can't do something that would induce them to move off the medication. So whatever they work with, they're allowed to meditate. But it's not to be sort of proposed in a way that this could replace your medication, even though it could.
Well, one of the things I've found is that, because I've known a few people who've been on antipsychotic medications, and what they tend to say is that the medication itself is so paralyzing to their ability to do and even to think normally, that it's very hard. I have trouble seeing how they can ever become normal while they're on medication, because the medication is so disabling in itself.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I had a friend, a neighbor of mine, who's been on it for like 7 years, and he tells me he can't dream. He has no dreams.
Yeah.
He has great trouble sleeping as well. But he moves very slowly. He cannot get a job. It's impossible for him to get a job. But he's highly intelligent. And it's a tragedy when you see a young man.
Oh, absolutely.
Like this. But he's afraid of going off his medications because he thinks he might do something crazy.
Mm.
And yet his medications are completely disabling him.
Yeah.
And I just think it's just so sad to see.
It's the old catch 22. And it is absolutely sad. I mean, I've got a couple of friends as well like that who are absolutely capable in life. And they've gone through some troubled times through teenage years, been put onto medication, and now just can't get off the things. And now they're absolute dropouts. They've been on the dole. They cannot get a job. There's no way they could function in a job. Yet this friend of mine can tell you every single scientific name of every plant.
He's an
amazing mind.
I can tell you a much more disturbing scenario here, which is that we have a lot of people now in their 20s who grew up as children on Ritalin, and there is a huge number of them. There are probably millions of them in this country. And what's actually happened is they've gone from Ritalin to SSRIs in their teenage years. And this is a common progression because they've been medicated since they were young. These are selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, so-called. Yes. Bit of a bogus name because no one's ever been able to prove how selective they are. And there's a guy who lives upstairs from me who's an example. And he's a creative guy, a nice guy. He works, but he's been medicated from a child, and now he's on antidepressants. And what this does is it actually puts a person into a state of drug dependency for their whole life.
Oh, absolutely. And it's all been orchestrated by Big Pharma. There's no doubt about it. Big pharmaceutical companies don't want you to get better, because someone that's better is a customer lost, if you think about it that way.
And it also has the effect of keeping these people relatively docile.
Oh, that's right.
Not dangerous to the status quo. I mean, they're not going to go out and do crazy things. They're not going to be revolutionaries. They're not going to force social change through. These people are disabled in the core of their motivation. So they can never be a threat.
They don't get in the way of the important people.
They can never be a threat to the power structure. And historically, one of the problems has always been for power is that how do we keep people subjugated? How do we stop people rising up and demanding their rights? Well, I do think that medication, keeping people heavily medicated, is one such way.
Oh, absolutely. And they do that with legal and illegal drugs. They do it with sex, drugs, and rock and roll. They do it with movies, entertainment. They keep you constantly entertained with every sort of entertainment imaginable. They do it with drugs. They do it with schizophrenia and depression. I mean, it's out of control. And it's dangerous to say they, but they being the establishment, they being the elite, who basically want a nation that's controllable and malleable.
Well, there is a collusion here, and I mean, this is a theme of our show, and we're going to keep talking about it. We're not going to shy away from it. We're going to face it squarely.
Absolutely,
aren't we, Josh? I mean, and it's a fact that we have to face, as scary as it is.
Why? Look, I know we're going to spend a whole show on it, but the fluoridization is such a key smoking gun to this fact. If they really cared about our teeth, they'd have dentists on Medicare, so you could go and see a dentist and not pay $1 million, not pay $1,000 a tooth.
And the most important things about dental care are keeping your gums clean and keeping your diet good. Those have been shown to be the most important things.
Yeah, meantime, they shove every sort of sugary sweet down our throat, telling us that we can get forcibly medicated through our water. But anyway, we're digressing.
We are, and we will be covering fluoride in depth.
Very, very good. All right, well, I think we should get on with our next story, which is laser pointers.
Indeed. Now, can we just, while we're getting this story up, can we just get the browser up and go to the story that I posted on the 9/11 Oz forum?
If you'd like to do that.
I'll just get that up.
So basically, to get Max and our audience up to date, what's been happening is, well, it all started with Channel 9 Chopper being laser pointed. On that particular evening, there was no news to cover, so they decided to cover this news. Headline, Channel 9 helicopter attacked by laser terrorists, something like that, of that flavor, basically saying that these laser pointers could blind people, blind pilots. Now, I don't know if anyone's ever picked up a pair of binoculars and looked through them. It's very, very hard to keep them still because the further you look, the tiniest little micro movements of your hands are massive movements from far distance. The same with a laser point. If you point a laser to a far off distance, tiny little shakes will absolutely quiver these lasers. Now, they're trying to tell me that you can get a laser, shine it all the way up into the sky at some helicopter, get it right into the windscreen and get it into...
What a joke.
A pilot's eye and hold it there long enough to blind the pilot that he could crash. I mean...
Pull the other one.
Who are they kidding? Are these... I mean, what? What?
That, not only that, Josh, they're claiming that these people are terrorists.
Yeah, well, that's what it is. It all comes down to everything's a terrorist. Everyone's a terrorist.
Well, they're actually using language that is mass murder. They
actually have used that died. Has used that term, and they call them attacks. They've used that term repeatedly. That there have been laser attacks.
Yeah.
Which is a gross exaggeration. Well, of what's actually happened.
There was a funny story on the news only 2 days ago saying, and there was another laser pointer attack. But then when we zoomed in, we realized it was only a Parramatta Council light show.
That was the helicopter.
Pointing up at the helicopter and the helicopter. Then they reported this as news.
They're totally
overreacting. Oh, but that's okay. It's a Parramatta Council light show, so that's fine.
And another thing that's happening, Josh, which is quite worth considering, is that a lot of people are getting annoyed at police helicopters buzzing over their houses. And some of these so-called attacks have actually been when the police have been, for no good reason at all, flying over neighbourhoods at night and shining searchlights down. Now, if that happened to me, I'm tempted to go out with my laser and you know, give them a blast
give
of my
them a
own.
What for?
Because they have no right to do that, as far as I know.
Yeah. Look, and I don't condone going out there and shining lasers at planes. I think it's a bloody stupid thing to do. But at the same point, I don't see how it can be a danger to anyone. Yeah, shine a camera right into the right and find the barrel and find the laser. It's going to make all these lens flares and it's going to look all dangerous. But honestly, there's no way anybody without some sort of bionic arm can keep a stable laser so perfectly in someone's eye while tracking a plane or a helicopter and doing any sort of damage. And
let's try an experiment, Josh. Just bear with us.
Yeah. Here we go. Harold's reaching for his laser pointer. Here we go.
This is a fairly cheap little thing I bought. I can't remember how much I paid.
Yeah.
Maybe $5, $10.
Yeah.
Yeah,
5 milliwatts or something.
It's kind of nice. It's got a flashlight and a laser.
Right.
And
now, so many people have got these are so handy. You can use them while teaching. You can use them on a workplace to show you know where you need to put something on a building. You know, people use them for all sorts, for a cat toy. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. And basically, why we're attacking this law, because it's so pointless.
You can track my hand with the beam.
Oh, look, that is really hard. Well, I mean, it's hard.
Yeah.
And it's a big area. Now, if you were standing back 500 meters,
that'd be tricky.
There's no way. Your hand, let alone your eye.
The tiniest movement causes a huge movement of the spot of the beam.
Oh, absolutely. Look, the reason why we're bringing this up.
Well, there's been a huge backlash, and I'd like to just read a few points from this article, which was in itself quite shocking and unusually so for the ABC News. The headline, which is published on the ABC, is "Backlash Over Ban on Laser Pointers," and so you can Google for that. It's also on the 9/11 Oz forum if you happen to drop by there, and we've got a discussion going on it.
911oz.com.
Now, the ABC story reads, "Amateur astronomers, teachers and surveyors will have to justify carrying lasers under new bans aimed at avoiding mass murder if aircraft are targeted."
See, this is This is another way of conditioning you and controlling you over ridiculous things. It's not actually about laser pointers. It's about telling you that you're under our control, that we will tell you what to do, and that you're a mass murderer for carrying a ridiculous little device.
However, it's quite important to realise that the law has been passed. However, there is an out, and it's a very easy out. If you happen to be using your laser to entertain your animal, you're allowed to have a laser. So
really?
It's a really strange little out. So you could say that I was just playing with a cat. Just happened to flick it into an aircraft.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That was in the news today. Check it
out. So you just use the cat claws.
Yeah.
The cat claws. But the fact of the matter is we're getting laws passed now which are under the guise of terrorism and mass murder over ridiculous things. And this will come to pass with everything. Oh, you weren't recycling. You're a terrorist. You're a bioterrorist.
Mm.
You're not turning your lights off. You're anti-environmental terrorist. These are all things that will happen. And it's not just anybody. It's the rich people as well. They'll be brought down like this as well.
And these new laws also have the effect of making you guilty and you have to prove your innocence. For example, previously, this is reading from the article, previously police needed to prove a laser had been used improperly in order to prosecute. Under the new laws, they would be able to frisk people for lasers and ask why they carried them.
Absolutely,
I mean, gobsmacking, isn't it? I mean, you could be walking down the street and a policeman can frisk you because he thinks you might be carrying a laser. And if he finds one, you've got to prove why you have it. And if you don't have a good enough excuse, you're in the clink.
Look, what is this? Is this police state China or is this Australia? Is this freedom? I just want to ask everyone out there, do you think it's freedom for some cop to come and frisk you for no apparent reason and then put you in jail for having a laser pointer in your pockets?
The prison term is 2 years.
Oh,
2 years jail, right? And anyone who carries a high-powered laser faces 14 years in jail.
And, you know, honestly, I...
There goes my five water.
Look, honestly, I do believe that this all came from the news not having a story that night, having some punk on the street going, oh, it'd be funny shining a laser at... The helicopter. The helicopter really taking time to get the barrel of the camera to find where this laser, getting some nice big lens flares and going, look how dangerous it is.
Oh, they just go out and someone points the laser and they film it. There wouldn't be an attack. That would be set up. Someone goes out with a laser and the helicopter flies off and films it.
And films it. False flag laser attack. False flag
laser attack. Wouldn't have been one. They wouldn't be getting one in the act.
So
now one of our intrepid commenters on the forum here has basically thrown down the gauntlet and wants to protest, and I've supported this chap.
Yeah.
And we're actually thinking about doing some kind of
laser
action.
Oh yeah. Well, everyone come and bring their laser pointers.
Well, one suggestion here was that we all go to the Parliament House and shine laser pointers on New South Wales Parliament House.
Brilliant.
I mean, sometimes civil disobedience is the only way to make an impact. And this is not going to hurt anyone. This is not hurting people, okay? They're trying to put it on us that these are deadly weapons, okay, which is false.
All right, when do you want to do this? I'm excited.
Well, look, I've said here that I'm ready for it, and I've called – this is a call to action because I believe this is a real – this is a turning point.
Bring it on.
Yeah, yeah.
Bring it on. All right, well, 911oz.com. Go to the forum and – you know, pledge. You're a to the action. I'd love to see hundreds of people all shining their crappy little $2 lasers at Parliament House.
Yeah,
and honestly speaking, this is so pathetic. I feel pathetic talking about this.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, we got this so-called world food shortage. We got bombs being dropped on innocent people in Iraq. We got depleted uranium. We got Big Pharma creating strange genetic mutations of corn. And here we are having to fight about stupid laser points only purely because this is the slow path to total tyranny and to every single part of your life being controlled
by the government. It is tyranny, and let's never forget it. And never forget that some of the worst forms of injustice are actually the most trivial. Are you familiar with Gandhi's Salt March?
Oh, absolutely.
This was to do with draconian, ridiculous laws that the English had passed. And I'm not sure of the actual detail, but I know it was to do with the selling of salt or the manufacture of salt. And
well, it's neo-mercantilism. Certain trades in small, but so instead they'd make the clothes over there, not to have for themselves, but to ship over to England, and then England would have the salt to ship over to, when in fact India could have the salt and the clothes, everything made by themselves. But that's right. There are all these menial things, like a black person couldn't walk on the footpath. They had to walk on a certain different foot, and all these sort of things, and. Yeah, we go, how, well, that's a whole lot different than laser pointers. Well, is it? It is having a whole bunch of, I mean, every law that is passed is another little bit of your freedom taken away. I mean, okay, so you think, oh, laser, that's what. Next week they'll pass another law and another and another and another. Soon you could walk down the street and a cop could come up to you and arrest you for something, because there is going to be a law for something you're doing wrong, and they'll just not like the look of you, or the government doesn't like what you're talking about or whatever, so they'll find a reason to arrest you, because there's so many ridiculous laws that you don't even know about that they'll just throw you in the slammer. Oh, in fact, we got you for 10 things, so we got you in there for 10 years, because 2 years for the laser pointer, 2 years for walking with odd socks on. So... honestly, people, I think this is worth demonstrating about.
Yeah, so stay tuned and come back to 911oz.com, and you'll probably find some information there about the planned protest. And we're going to make this happen, folks.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Max, are you in on it?
I'll get my 5 water.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Okay.
So what's next on the show?
Well, we've got some pretty serious news to cover, so I think we should probably move on. We really need to talk about the world food crisis, and we need to investigate this. We need to, and you'll find another article published here about this, which was posted on the forum here a couple of weeks ago, and the story has since really mushroomed. Initially, it was one statement that was made by the head of the International Monetary Fund, which I posted as a forum article. And since then, there has been a flood of these stories, and stories coming out of food riots in the Philippines, the government intervening to supply rice. And this is what's happening in the Philippines, right, is that the government has been forced to intervene over the heads of the rice importers, because of the price of rice, it's got too high. And the government is actually doing a service to the people by bringing the military out and overriding the whole commercial infrastructure to give rice to the people. It looks to me like we have some kind of conflict here between corporates and government, at least in one case, in the Philippines.
I can tell you right now, there is no such thing as a food shortage. We have got so much food, it's getting thrown out every day. Tons and tons and tons of food. We've always had way too much food for us. What's happening is that Big Pharma basically want to fool everyone into thinking that we don't have enough food and that we need genetically modified crops and foods to sustain our population.
Indeed.
And it's just not true. And so how they're doing this, I mean, of course there's fuel prices and there's other things that are contributing to higher priced food. But at the end of the day, there is no such thing as a food crisis. If we wanted food, Australia could grow our own food. Most parts of Asia can grow massive amounts of rice.
I think you're right. However, I think there is also another component to this, which is the biofuels issue.
Yeah, now, but there's not massive amounts of biofuel.
There's not. But what has happened is that a lot of countries have been kind of lured into switching their crops over to biofuel crops rather than food sustaining crops. And one of the consequences of that is that there is less food available generally. And but it's an outrageous situation. I mean, it shouldn't occur.
But I honestly feel that this is just another news talking point which has no basis in fact. That news has just got on board of this thing. That mainstream news everywhere is pumping out this story that there's a food crisis, food shortage, food crisis, crisis, crisis. Everyone starts talking about it. It becomes the week's talking point, the months, the years. And all of a sudden there's then a justification for food prices to hike. There's protectionism starts stepping into place. People start freaking out. Then Big Pharma come in with the big answers. It's a problem, reaction, solution. We have the answer. It's genetically modified crops.
That's definitely on the agenda. Definitely on the agenda. Also on the agenda is that they want to make cars run on ethanol. And, I mean, that is such a preposterous thing. Because ethanol is produced from growing food crops. Okay,
and if you believe the whole carbon nonsense...
Well, they're calling it green, but ethanol is not green.
It's not green.
It's a complete furphy.
That comes out... I mean, look, honestly, carbon is not the problem of global warming right now, I'll tell you that, but that's a whole other show. The fact of the matter is... there's more carbon that's spat out from biofuel.
I mean, they call ethanol a green fuel, and it's just an outrageous Orwellian twist of language to basically call something green because that has some, you know, psychological value, when in fact it has no benefit at all. Like like cars that run on ethanol, I'm pretty confident of this, is that they will produce as much CO2 as a car that runs on petrol.
They do. In fact, they produce more.
I mean, they're treating us like complete and utter cattle.
Oh, absolutely. And folks, please go and do your own research. Research this. Don't believe us. Never believe us. Go and do your own research, because we don't want to be the mouth of propaganda. Go and look it up. Go and figure it out and see that we're telling the truth. But biofuels... basically, we're putting food into our cars.
I mean, look, there's a lot of reasons why the situation globally is becoming serious. But it looks to us like there is some kind of deliberate agenda here, that it's not just happening as an accident of this or an accident of that. There is a combination of factors which have decisions behind them. Decisions were made.
And we're not saying that there's one big mastermind going, "Whoa-ha-ha-ha." Now I shall stop the food. It's not like that. It is definitely part of human condition, but there is definitely big, massive pharmaceutical and oil interests and governmental interests, corporate interests, into controlling how much food is available and then coming up with the solution.
You know, Josh, if I had money to invest, you know what I'd invested in?
Oh, tell me right now.
I wouldn't invest it in gold. I wouldn't invest it in silver.
What would you invest in?
I'd invest it in seed.
Absolutely. And I've said that to Max today. In fact, I said seeds, $1.20 right now. Fuck, bugger all. You can go down there and buy some seeds very, very cheap. Give it 10 years. Yeah. And not only seed, go and get original seed. And there's a big movement in the organic movement to collect original seed that aren't genetically modified, because soon enough, the GM companies will get so, you know, Monsanto will crawl right into every part of our lives that you will have no choice but to consume.
Absolutely.
Genetically modified product.
You already are consuming genetically modified product in
Australia. Oh, absolutely.
Anything in the supermarket.
Most things. Most breads. If you go to get some bread.
Corn chips.
Corn chips, milk, everything, corn. Oil. You know, I mean.
And of course, it contaminates the genome. Once it's been introduced into a country, you can't really keep it restricted to one area, because it blows in the wind. It contaminates and changes the genetic structure of anything that it comes up against. That's what I've heard. Actually, just to your left there, if you see that CD box just right there.
Yes.
This is something we're going to be reviewing on Truth News. It's a documentary called The Future of Food. And I haven't had a chance to watch it yet, but it's been highly recommended.
By Deborah Coons. Garcia.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, it says here there is a revolution happening. Well, just reading from the back cover of the DVD, it says there is a revolution happening in the farm fields and on the dinner tables of America. a revolution that is transforming the very nature of the food we eat. The Future of Food offers an in-depth investigation into the disturbing truth behind the unlabeled, patented, genetic-engineered foods that have quietly filled the grocery store shelves for the past decade. The Future of Food examines the complex web of market and political forces that are changing what we eat as huge multinational corporations seek to control the world's food system. The film also explores alternatives to large-scale industrial agriculture, placing organic and sustainable agriculture as real solutions to the farm crisis today.
Honestly, and it, and all these people saying, "Ooh, the argument is genetically modified food good or bad for you? Oh, I think it's good for you. I think it's bad for you. I don't think it's anything wrong with it."
It's That's a distraction,
not the
isn't
argument.
It? It's a distraction.
That is the distraction. The argument is, I don't want some company owning apples. Outright. Mother Nature owns
totally
apples.
Agree.
I own apples. Yeah. I should be able to get a seed, put it in the ground and eat the bloody apple without paying any sort of subsidies. And this is what we're talking about. Genetically modified food is then owned. And who and what do you need? You need food. You can't live without food. So whoever owns the food owns you. That's it, full stop. So I think it's a very important issue. And it's a very heated one. You know, you'll get a lot of response. But the fact of the matter is, you know, this is what I'm telling companies now. When I talk to producers, I say, look, stuff it. I'm not going to wait for people to say GMO, this is GMO on their packet. I say any company that knows it's GMO free, put that on their labeling. So let's not worry about getting government to say, okay, GMO products have to be labeled GMO. Let's say stuff them, because they're not gonna. It's not gonna happen. They're too far lobbied.
Look,
so
let's get
companies to say we're GMO free.
I just want to make it really crystal clear for our listeners the seriousness of the situation we currently have with the food crisis. The price of rice has almost tripled within this year. It has gone up. It has gone up by more than double since the beginning of the year. This is no reason for it to.
There is no reason. There is as much rain, there is as much sun, there is much people farming the stuff. There is no reason for rice to be triple the price, apart from a little bit extra from petrol and moving the stuff around.
But what this does is this pushes a lot of people into the brink of starvation. And this was the announcement that was made, which you can read on the 9/11 Oz forum. Mass starvation predicted by the head of the International Monetary Fund. And when someone who is the head of an organization tells you there's going to be mass starvation, you better listen, folks. I mean, this is not just kidding around.
No. Well, you've got Afghanistan, the Prime Minister, the President of Afghanistan, saying to the world, saying, well, I need to tell the Afghani people that it's not us, it's the world is in food crisis. The world, because the Afghanis are blaming the government, and then if you've got people that are hungry for more than a couple of days, they start getting angry, they start revolution.
Yeah.
And so you've now got a lot of these world leaders saying it's a world issue, it's a world issue.
You'll get massive unrest, rebellion, revolution, and you'll get a crackdown against that too.
So you've got to be listening to what these people are saying. These people are saying it's a world issue. It's a world issue. What do you get? Global governments reacting with global corporations to be the answer to a problem that they've orchestrated, which is probably some sort of world food organization that has to, where every vitamin, everything has to go through them in terms of being standardized, like the Food and Drug Administration.
Well, this plan is already in place.
Oh, absolutely.
If you Google the phrase Codex Alimentarius, you will find information and you'll find documentaries made by dissidents on this subject, which is quite a shocking revelation
of
what they have planned.
Started by ex-Nazi and SS officers, I'm pretty sure.
Which government?
No, that organization.
You, quite possibly. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure I read up.
The agenda is total control.
Yeah.
They call it, the word they use is harmonization.
Oh, well, it's always beautiful sounding words like that, isn't it?
Yeah. But everything is to be controlled. Everything is to be regulated. Every form of food that you can possibly eat is to be restricted, regulated, and quote unquote harmonized.
Not only that, have you paid, sir, have you paid for your carbon credits for that cow?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, but I kind of don't afford the carbon credits. Well, you're going straight to prison.
Well,
they wonder why there's a freaking food crisis. Because Farmer Joe can't grow his own little cow. Because everything's bureaucratized into a global bureaucracy, which is the most crazy bureaucracy you can imagine. And then all food is controlled and you end up with a really ugly situation.
Josh, I think we've basically run to the end of our show tonight.
We have. Folks, if you'd like to leave any messages, do they go to truthnews.com.au yet?
Unfortunately, we still don't have a functioning site. However, the site is up.
Okay.
And we do have a contact option.
Right.
If you go to truthnews.com.au, there is a contact us option. I'm going to be working over the Anzac long weekend to get everything up and running.
Bless you. See, this is what the diggers died for. Indeed. That we could have truth. You know, we could have a true democracy where people say their view.
But we're also for each show, we'll have a forum topic dedicated to it.
Good stuff.
Where you can discuss the issues we've raised on the show.
Yep.
And we'll have articles up there soon and we'll be really kicking along.
We're eventually going to get a Skype line in as well. So we'll have live callers calling in during the show and having their rant. Maxim, are you excited?
Oh, I'm very excited. Just think I'll throw in something else for you all to consider out there. While you're getting ready to deal with GMO, just think about the nano food technology.
No. Hello.
Oh, dear.
Hello. Jeez.
That'll be the subject for our whole program.
Way to work it up. Work it up at the end. All right. Well, have a great Anzac long weekend, everybody. I'm Joshua Jackson.
I'm Herowood Fenton.
And this is Truth News.